Welcome to MGO Podcast 7.18, where we mostly think about the children. Think about them using gasoline and how that's terrible. Think about them leaving the state. That can't happen. Hello, Ace, back in the podcast seat, podcasting from coast to coast, wherever pods are being
casted and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, here we are.
Was that better or worse than our usual intro?
I think worse.
But the usual intro is just me staring at you and being like, what, hello?
That was still somehow worse.
Come on, Ace.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to, like, diversify. This is what science is. It's a progression based on trial and error.
Are we getting into this black holes thing now?
What, you mean gravitational waves?
Yeah.
We could talk about that.
We could. I wouldn't have much to add, but.
Oh, so like Ace's Gravitational Waves podcast is now on the docket?
I mean, probably.
Hey.
I was a history major, man.
I got two words for you. Ars Technica. It will keep you up on all the stuff that I keep up on.
Duly noted.
And advice ignored, I can tell.
Yes.
Well.
You know, you tried, though. That was
fine.
The important
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. Millennials. Are you a millennial?
I think technically.
Ugh. Millennials.
We are the worst.
We are the worst. Anyway, Michigan beats Purdue in a game about halfway through. I was like, you know what? This is the negative stereotype of a Beeline team that all the rival fans try to put on Michigan. And in retrospect, I have no idea why I ever thought that. They didn't shoot very many threes. They didn't shoot efficiently from three. They killed it inside the arc. They out-rebounded the enormous Purdue Boilermakers, and they held them to, like, 56 points.
Yeah, on, like, 0.92 points per possession.
That's just bizarre.
It's insane.
I mean, part of it is that post offense is just not efficient.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Hammonds and Haas having an okay. I mean, it seems like they're kind of physically dominating Michigan centers, and then you go and look at the box score, and they're averaging less than a point per shot.
Yeah, and that's, like, there's a reason that the NBA has largely gone away from the Shaq-type post-up offense.
And if you watch the three-point contest on Saturday night, you know exactly why. Those are really efficient shots, and people are getting insanely good at them.
Well, even more than that, like, if you're just posting up, you're not really doing that much to disrupt a defense.
No, I mean, this was probably the weirdest stat I stumbled upon while putting together the post on Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman last week, was that it came as no surprise that Michigan was one of the close to dead last in the country in terms of shot attempts at the rim as percentage of their total shots. But Purdue was right down in the same range, because those post-up shots aren't normally getting you dunks and layups. They're getting you 5 to 10 footers.
Yeah.
And those aren't that easy to make, especially when they're contested.
Yeah. When Michigan did a pretty good job of contesting it, except for a couple of Ricky Doyle instances where he let guys spin to the baseline and throw down. As 7'2" people are wont to do.
You know.
But, you know, Doyle did a really good job of – not Doyle. Denal did a really good job of staying between his guy in the basket and at least forcing him to put up that baby hook.
Yeah. He was doing a pretty solid job of making sure to stick to the scouting report, which was getting repeated by
– Dokic.
Dokic. Yeah. Ad nauseum. But,
I mean –
but it was legitimate, because they kept doing it. So,
like, on the one hand, I wish that he wouldn't repeat himself so much. I think that's not like a particularly endearing broadcast quality, but he did at least.
When he's right, he's right.
Yeah, he is right. And he did bring that, the fact from the scouting report, which I don't think a lot of other color people did. And no. I always go back to that, the peak Dokic moment in that regard, which is when Michigan played Kansas State, and Kansas State just had this big who did nothing but shoot.
Yep.
And Dokic, like, passed it down anyway, like, watch it. This is going to be a shot. And every time he touched the ball in the game, it was a shot.
That was amazing, because it was just really entertaining to see this guy totally follow through on Dokic's scouting report. Yeah. But,
I like him.
When he's not trolling, he's a very good analyst.
Yeah, I like him as a color commentator. I just wish he would, get off the things that he says so frequently. It's, a little more
and a little bit of, maybe a little bit less on the efforty, gritty.
Well, I honestly, like, so he brought this up after Dawkins got a pretty mansome offensive rebound and got a putback, and he was like, that's the kind of play you don't really see very much from Michigan. And while as a person who hears so much about grit and heart and all that stuff and just loathes all of it, I kind of hear that. But also, like, he had a point that I think was accurate where that kind of
– on that play, sure.
Yeah, that kind of, like, extra possession because someone did something that you might not expect because he was just going to go get the ball is something that we really haven't seen for Michigan very much since Mitch McGarry left.
Yeah.
And when Mitch was here, I mean, that was just a huge lift to the team because it's like, well, here's – a steal and a half a game. Here's a couple of balls that he recovers a game. And that really, I think, tilts your equation there towards victory. And he's right. Michigan kind of lacks that at this juncture.
They do. I mean, they're missing that. They're missing the...
Look at me. I'm defending Dan Dockich.
And effort-gritty stuff.
Effort-gritty business. But I think he's right. Like, I think that is something that... Like Michigan doesn't.
Yeah, I was more saying it. Like sometimes he'll explain things that are much more easily explained by like just other basketball things.
Sure, yeah.
Just the effort gritty stuff.
He goes back to that well a lot.
But yeah, I totally agree that with Michigan, then like to see a little bit more, especially in the offensive class, I think. But yeah, I mean, Dockich was actually pretty bearable during the Purdue game because he stayed away from the trolling stuff and his analysis was pretty spot on.
Well, I think he's no longer going to fight with Anthony Wright on Twitter.
That's over now.
I think he's decided that I can't do this because it's just he got a little heated last time. So
that got intense.
It did. But I like that too. I like the fact that he searches for his name on Twitter constantly.
I've enjoyed watching Twitter adapt to that and start typing out Dan Dockich in ways that are not as easily searchable.
Yeah, if you've got the Twitter username Kitch, I think you're going to be in business there for. A lot of mentions.
Yes. Never...
Anyway, we should actually talk about the game.
Yes. This was a very important game.
It was a very important game. So Michigan now has a third very good win with Texas performing like a tourney team.
Yes.
So they've got three of those in their pocket. And usually if you've got three wins of that variety, you're pretty good as long as you finish 500 in conference, which Michigan has already guaranteed.
Yes. And with a home game against Northwestern, you'd like to think that they will do better than that.
Right, and they have Ohio State, which is really scuffling this year. So they've pretty much punched their ticket for the tournament with this win, barring a complete and vast collapse down the stretch.
Yes, and you'd like to think that of the four games that look at least relative degrees of tough, I'm including Ohio State in that because it's on the road, that they should be able to steal at least one of those.
Yeah, I mean...
And then they're very safely in if they win two of their last five.
Yeah, if they get up to two more games...
11 wins in this conference.
11-7 in the Big Ten. Yeah. They only played Rutgers once.
I don't know whether to be bummed out about that or not, to be honest.
The answer is not. You don't ever want to play Rutgers. Although it really kind of brings home the whole why did we add this program to our conference is that instead of playing Michigan State a second time this year, they played Rutgers, which is like, huh.
Yeah.
But anyway, we should actually talk about this game.
We're really making an effort.
We're working up to it.
Well, two Big Ten teams are on a collision course for an 0-14 matchup.
Yeah, you keep bringing that up. Like, it's so exciting.
Because it's amazing. And terrible.
They play each other again.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate, because if they, like, split that series.
It would be great if that was just the game to decide.
I really need Rutgers to go 0-18.
Yeah, I think they have to. But, they're being given.
We're not talking. We need to talk about the game.
Yeah, we do. I will say that they're being given a 19% chance to beat Minnesota at Minnesota, that's which amazing. Is hilariously low. Their own 12. Good God. But yes, back to Michigan.
Back to Ace's Gravitational Ace podcast.
The Gravitational Ace podcast.
No, read ours. Goddamn. All right. So Michigan actually got. Some bad luck in this game, I think, given the way that they shot from three and Purdue shot from three, especially with the person of Caleb Swanigan.
Yeah, a guy who's shooting like 15% in Big Ten games heading into that and then just drills two three-pointers in
a row.
Yeah.
Definitely one of those guys who in the game preview, I'd be mad if he hits a three was yes.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely was. It was a yes.
And so they eat a couple of those. And I'm just like, is this how we're going to lose this game? And they managed to basically extend those two threes into a 6-point lead with about, three, 4 minutes remaining. And then Michigan manages to hold them off for the rest of the game without scoring. They go on 11-0 run. And in the aftermath, you're kind of like, how did this even happen? You know, Walton is 0 of 9 before the and one that really puts Michigan up. Robinson didn't do much. Did he even hit a three in this game? I don't think so.
No, he did not. He had two drives to the bucket. Other than that, Rafael Davis is ridiculously good at off-ball defense. They just made sure the ball was going to go to anybody but him on the perimeter.
And that worked for a while because Zach Irvin was settling for mid-range jumpers, you know, and often off the bounce.
And his three was just off to start the game. He just wasn't shooting very well in the first half. And in the second half, he started picking it up.
He's scuffling, and then Irvin kind of, I mean, bursts to life, hits a couple of threes, and then he's getting to the basket with that swooping layup.
Yes.
He gets it up past Haas. He gets it up past Hammonds. You know, there are a couple of other incidents where he ends up getting assists, really, you know, turned it on and saved this game for Michigan, because I can't name any other guy who really played particularly well.
I mean, I thought Rockman had a decent game, but that was, you know, he only took six shots.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, he did well in bit as a bit player, but he was a bit player in this one.
Yeah.
And other than that, there wasn't really anybody who stood out. I mean, Irvin was the only guy to finish in double digits. So
that is, I mean, Michigan wins a game like that, and you're like, wow.
Yeah, no, that was to get no threes from Walton and Robinson and beat a good team is not something you expect to see.
Yeah, and Walton had like what, six attempts?
Yep, he was 0-for-6.
And most of those looks were A+.
Yeah, like, they were good. I was not at all upset with the way he was playing.
No,
he was getting decent shots. They weren't going in.
You know, there was like a period in the second half where Michigan just looked like a team of Kobe's playing.
Unnecessary shots.
Walton did put up a shot where the ball never left his hand. Irvin put up a shot where the ball never left its hand. I think there were like two or three of those from Irvin. I was just like, what happened? Like, why is everybody playing like this is a Tommy Amaker team and everybody's Aaron Harrison?
Yeah.
Like,
they did start running some really nice offense down the stretch.
They
though,
did, but there were like, it was like 6 minutes where
yeah,
it was just hero ball the whole way. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't get that. But down the stretch, I loved the play that drew up to get Irvin the game-winning bucket, where they just set a little side screen. And that was designed to get him that shot from the free throw line that Hammonds could not get out on.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a nice little. I know you hate two-point jumpers, but that was a good one.
It's like two-point jumper land. I'm like, oh.
Right. If you're able to get Irvin that shot, I think he's proven that he can hit that pretty well. And when you're going against a team with those shot blockers inside, if you can get him that look clean as they got it, I like that play.
That's one of the frustrating things about playing Purdue is that, like, I just envision any one of those dudes on Michigan's team. Because, like,
it would be nice.
You don't even have to, like, Jakic makes a good point. Like, you don't have to post up as a Michigan. You don't have to understand footwork.
Screen, roll.
You don't have to do anything.
Dunk.
Except catch the ball, dunk, and play defense. And
yeah, Purdue's guys are definitely capable of that.
Yep.
But
whatever.
Donnell's getting all right at the old pick and roll.
He's just still, there were still a couple of opportunities in this game where it's like, this is a 6'9 guy with no lift.
Yeah.
And
he's going against 7-footers with some lift.
Yeah. And it's just like, I hope that Teske is a legit 7-footer, and Davis has actually really transformed his body, so he looks like
he looks the part now of a legitimate big.
He's dropped about 30 pounds. He's gotten much bigger up top. He looks very
but he plays his high school games against like the Lilliputians, so it's impossible to tell how much he's actually progressed.
Exactly, zero idea of how he's going to be as a player, but. Who knows?
We'll see.
Going to be a lot of posts on the roster next year.
Yes.
But anyway, you know, I think Robinson is a guy who's developing a little bit of that kind of Stauskas game.
Yeah.
But still hasn't really been able to unlock defenses. Like, there was a period in the second half where he was like, all right, you know what? I have to get my shot off. So he like took his dribble and then he came off and he got a decent look.
Yeah.
Didn't go down. And then he just kind of drifted out of the offense for the next 5 minutes for the hero ball portion. That was part of the hero ball part.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that I have a tough time counting too much what happens with him against Purdue because Davis is just that good at defense that
you just keep saying that because he's on your draft again team.
I'm really not.
You are.
He won the defensive player of the year last year.
I know.
Opponents were shooting like 15% against him heading into the first Michigan Purdue game. Dylan posted that stat and it was like, yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, he is that good. And when I've taken to just watching him play defense.
Because he's on your draft to get in team.
Possibly.
But I guess, like, if you're Michigan and you can get him out of the game by having him check Robinson, that's a win, I guess, for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that they have that guy. I was, and he took advantage of when they switched Vince Edwards onto him early on, he just blew right past him for a layup. Michigan was actually going at Edwards quite a bit in the first half. Rockman had a layup on him, too.
You're just saying that because he's on my draft to get in team.
I didn't even know that. Thank you very much. I have not tracked hoops again at all.
Well,
I think I won. So.
I have no hope of – like my one of my centers is Doyle.
Yeah, I think Doyle was like your first center.
Ola was, but Ola got hurt. So yeah. Really, who knows what he would have done otherwise.
Also, he's Alex Ola.
Alex Ola is a very good college player, I'll have you know.
I'm starting to think your ability to judge bigs is about on par with your ability to judge quarterbacks.
What are you talking about? I was correct about Rudock. I was. Eventually, I was correct.
Yeah.
And then, like, what was I supposed to do with the quarterbacks I had on the board?
That's fair. But, you know, there's some prediction history going back.
Yeah. Prediction history, the most recent one that was well thought out, was very correct. Thank you. The Shieldhouse thing I had to pick out. There was, like, no choice because I everybody else had their quarterback, and I was like.
In Hako's case, like, seven.
Yeah. We're still not
but
talking
anyway,
about this
yes.
game.
No, we're not. But we should probably mention that Caris LeVert came back.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, he looked a step and a half slow.
I mean, we can at least, like, all the people who were howling on the internet about how Caris isn't going to make America great
tough.
Again and is, like, embarrassing the team. It's like, no.
No, he's hurt.
He's still hurt. And, like, the like, crazy conspiracy theories about the NBA draft, it's like, no, he needs to be out there so that people are like, oh, right, he can play basketball.
Yeah, a ludicrous conspiracy theory since him sitting out would have hurt his draft stock.
Right, yeah.
Internet people. All up in my mentions.
Present company excluded, of course.
Yes,
unless you're one of those people, in which case present company is not excluded.
Yeah, there's no.
Please don't at me.
Please. No ads. but yeah, I mean, you know, I thought he actually did a decent job of, first of all, he pulled down 5 rebounds in like 11 minutes. Like he was able to make a little bit of an impact on defense. And then he got off a decent looking shot that just didn't go down. He had a couple of like should have been assists kicking it out off of baseline drives before Purdue absolutely shut down that whole gambit by Michigan.
Yeah, the whole baseline drive thing didn't go so well.
It did not. I mean, that's been something that's been working for Michigan for the last few games, but in this one, Purdue learned that
they had that rather well.
They scouted it that Michigan guys tend to not shoot in those situations, so if you stay home, you're likely to catch a kick out.
Well, it's hard to shoot when you're underneath the basket.
Exactly. But teams still will collapse down on that guy and leave shooters wide open. And Purdue did that a couple times early. LeVert had kickouts. Michigan missed. And then they started staying home and just catching those kickout passes. So that got stymied after a while.
Yeah, because they would cover the corners and then they would also make sure that the guy in the middle was covered. And usually that's not the case. In Michigan, late in this game, they found a couple of guys. I don't know where you would call that. Kind of in between the top of the key and the corner.
Yeah, just above the break.
Just above the break.
Yeah.
It's my lingo. You're also the lingoist.
Apparently. I'm adding job titles
chief,
by the day.
Chief enunciator and lingoist of MGO blog. Ace Anbender, everybody. Say hi, Ace.
You do this all the time, man. You're killing me.
Fail! You failed at saying hi. Just like Purdue failed at beating Michigan.
Good segue.
We should give a little bit of a shout out to Mar for the sequence late where he was very handsy.
Yes.
Got his balls. Got his hands on a couple of balls. This is why enunciation is important.
Very important.
Word choice. And caused a couple turnovers, one of them in the open court that really kind of kept Michigan in it during the hero ball phase, maybe even broke them out of said hero ball phase.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, he and Walton combined for 5 steals, which were all the steals Michigan had, but I thought the biggest thing for Michigan in the second half was finally adjusting to – they really started going harder on those double teams into the post, and they were able to get some turnovers off of that.
Yeah.
They were able – even if they weren't getting turnovers, they were kind of rushing the shots from Purdue's bigs a little bit or forcing them to pass it out from the post. And in the first game, they kind of half-committed to those where they weren't forcing turnovers at all, and they weren't really – pressuring the bigs to to adjust to it at all. And then they were also leaving shooters open. So Purdue kind of lit it up from the outside and had a nice efficient day from the post. And that just killed them. But in this one, they were actually really committing to those double teams. And that, especially in the second half, made a really, really big difference.
Yeah, they didn't really give up many 3-pointers. I mean, Klein got a few off, but often those weren't because of the bigs. It was because someone was falling asleep on a screen. LeVert fell asleep in the first half on a pretty bad one.
But other than Klein, like, you didn't see many.
Other than Klein, they only hit 3 3-pointers, so.
And 2 of them were from Swanigan.
Yes. And that those you just go, fair enough.
Right, that's, yeah.
Like, yeah, like, if he's going to hit those, we're screwed.
I still don't want anyone checking a guy that far out when he's shooting 50% in Big Ten.
I want Zach Irvin preparing to have to stop a post-up, which he did. I mean, he hung in there.
He hung in, yeah. And that's.
He at least.
I never
forced Swanigan to shoot over him.
I never get mad at that, like, all right, so Michigan is going to be undersized at the four. They're going to suffer there defensively. There's trade-offs there. When Michigan is doing things that aren't necessarily part of that, then I get frustrated with their defense.
Yeah. I can live with that matchup if Irvin is going right back at that matchup on the other end. And
he wasn't in the first half very well, but then the second half.
He really took advantage of the fact that Swanigan's going to have a hard time keeping up with him.
Yeah, that guy is not going to be able to do much on the perimeter. Like, if Irvin just wants to lift up, then Swanigan has to let that happen for the most part.
And Irvin took advantage of that. Yeah. So that was nice to see.
And thus a victory. The strangest of victories over Purdue.
It's got to be over anybody this season, I think, for Michigan. That's for them to pull this out while shooting 5 for 20 from 3.
Good Lord.
And then somehow winning the rebound battle. I'm still astounded.
Baffling.
By that. Like, decidedly winning the rebound battle.
Baffling. Probably lucky.
No.
That happens, you know.
Every once in a while, you fluke into some things.
Every once in a while, yeah. Right. We are going to take a break here, and we're going to come back. We're going to continue not talking about the Purdue-Michigan game, but we have a gimmicky top five for you that I hope you like. And if you don't at me. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
So welcome back to the MGO podcast presented by UGP and Moe's. I was supposed to do that at the beginning of the show, but I did not.
Because we're pros.
Shut up. You're hurting my feelings. We would like to thank our advertisers, Underground Printing, Moe's Sports Shop, the Alumni Association, the University of Michigan, the residents in Ann Arbor downtown, Homeshare Lending, and of course, Ann Arbor Elder Law. Ace, you didn't do it. You're supposed to wear like a shirt, and then we talk about the shirt that you're wearing. What shirt are you wearing, Ace?
I'm wearing a Run the Jewels shirt.
No, you're wearing an Underground Printing shirt.
That
Ace.
I am.
Probably the potato one.
I do need to get one of those because, you know.
Have we not just told Rishi to ship us all one? And we need to like the Aspire potato shirt.
Yes, we're
doing it right now.
Let's get those sent out.
Get those on the MGO staff because we are not at all hypocritically obsessed with potatoes now.
Definitely not.
We have not at all talked way more about potatoes than Ohioans looking for jobs over the past 3 weeks. And this is not at all an SEC commissioner type situation. Bam, segue.
Don't at us.
Don't at us. Please don't at me about the potato that sold for over $1 million, the picture.
You're never shaking that.
Please don't at me. I don't want to see it anymore. I don't want to see it.
Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
I have. Stop that, Ace. All right. We have a gimmicky top five list, which is the top five things the SEC will try to ban next, probably prompted by Jim Harbaugh, but who knows?
Most likely.
Ace, your number five.
Photoshop edits. Michigan is too good at them, and therefore they should be banned.
Fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. Ice emoji? Ice emoji.
Yes.
There's an ice emoji, too.
Indeed.
I wonder if...
I learned that from Isaac Nauta.
Yeah. Screw that guy. No, it's fine.
He just made a bad decision.
I just audibly added. I tweeted it.
Yep.
Isaac Nauta on our podcast.
Shouldn't do that.
Shouldn't do that.
That's bad.
My number five is official visits. I mean, let's just take a step back here and think about the kids and
the most important thing.
The most important thing. And like, we are giving them the opportunity to visit college campuses. I mean, why are we doing this? Let's think about the kids and not do this.
That's a valid point.
Ace, your number four.
I never thought about it that way. The state of New Jersey, also unfair.
Oh, so what you think they'll like forcibly, secede them?
Yeah, I think so.
But you can still recruit like Canadians. So will that help?
They should ban those too.
You can't ban Canadians.
You can absolutely ban Canadians.
Well, I mean, the NCAA does not have the power to like delete Canada.
In the best interests of the children in America uh-huh. who are playing this great game of football.
You really sound like Charlie Day right now.
Oh God, that's not good. That's not good at all.
No, it is good because you're like doing a parody. Speaking as yourself.
Yeah, I sure hope not.
I hope not too, because then one, you'd be an idiot, and two, you wouldn't know who you are.
Yeah, that would be bad. On both counts.
Bad.
But yeah. Anyway, let's protect the children of America and ban New Jersey because they produced Rashawn Gary, and ban Canada because that's unfair to the rest of the Americans. I guess I added to my number four.
Yeah, that's
New Jersey and Canada, just in case.
And wherever Mo Wagner's from, that's gone too.
I believe it's Germany.
Alsace-Lorraine, whatever. My number four is Michigan, Florida on New Year's Day. That's out.
Totally out.
No more of that. Let's think of the children once more. Some of those children are going to lose 41-7 while not giving a maximum effort, to be honest. And we should prevent that from happening. Also banned Michigan, Florida in the NCAA tournament.
Fair enough. I'm still getting use of that Florida Gator gif.
Ace, you're number three.
People named Jim. Tough break for Jim McElwain, but ultimately for the best.
What about Jim Bo Fisher? He's like double banned.
Yeah, no, he is absolutely out.
He is right gone. Good Lord. How do you even live with yourself, Jim Bo?
Trying to jam two names into one.
Two Michigan names into one name.
Yeah, he's really banned.
He's like super banned.
He's gone.
You're out, Jim Bo Fisher. SEC says so. My number three is the winged helmet. Which is, let's be fair, a complete and unreasonable advantage both in recruiting and being able to identify people downfield. I mean, this has been around for 50 years. Michigan has been cheating.
Cheating.
For 50 years.
They're cheating.
With a distinctive helmet style. All helmets from now on must be Alabama style with different colors.
Imagine if Treon Harris was throwing at winged helmets. He'd be at like 70%.
Yeah.
Basically be worn.
In fact, you know, forget the different colors. All helmets have to be Alabama helmets.
Yes.
So nobody has any idea what's going on. That's my opinion.
Paul. There it is.
Ace number two.
Air travel.
Okay.
Because, I mean, if you can't find people within driving distance, then why do you even have a football program?
It's not good for the environment.
No, it's not. It's terrible for the environment. You're endangering these kids by putting them 30,000 feet in the air and then expecting them to come back down. Who knows what will happen up there?
Also, like, sometimes geese get disoriented.
Might get sucked into a jet engine. You know, that's not good.
That's bad.
That's horrible impact.
And then they have to go to airports, and the food in the airports is really overpriced.
It is. We can't subject these kids to, like, you know, a $12 sandwich from Applebee's.
Oh, man.
That's just absurd.
You know, the worst meal of my life was in the Detroit airport. There's like a Mediterranean restaurant in the Delta terminal. Don't go to it. It's they just give you like a pile of rice and then the driest, like the chicken that they didn't even cook. They just left out until all moisture left it. Don't go there. I don't know what it's called. They'd probably sue me if I told you what it was called, but just don't go there. My number two is kind of similar. It's visa-free interstate travel. If you remember The Hunt for Red October.
Never saw it.
What? Are you serious? You've seen Happy Gilmore, but you haven't seen The Hunt for Red October?
Remember how we went over how I'm a millennial earlier? That's playing into it.
Everybody is – that's on like TNT every other hour. All right. Well, I'm going to explain this very carefully to you. The Hunt for Red October, which is a fabulous movie, is about a Russian sub that plans to defect to the United States. And – one of the officers, this is a spoiler alert, but I mean,
I deserve it.
You deserve it. Spoiler alerts for Casablanca next. Good Lord. Just compare The Hunt for October to Casablanca. I'm fired up. I feel like this is the most Jamie Morris podcast we've ever done.
Yep. Definitely some emotional yelling.
And he's one of the officers is just really fascinated by the American ideal that you can go wherever you want within the country and nobody can check that. And he's like, you know, I have to have my papers if I'm going to leave my city or go to another place in Russia. And in America, they just let you drive. That's not a direct quote. I haven't seen it that much.
It's been a while.
Yeah. And then he gets shot and he dies because there's like a KGB guy. And as he's dying, he's like, I would have liked to have seen Montana. And then he dies. And so, yeah, the SEC is basically Russia.
Okay. Yeah.
And we are the Americans enjoying the visa-free interstate travel that will be withdrawn by Comrade Sankey.
Oh, Comrade Sankey.
So now I assume this is all perfectly clear to you.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, definitely. Very much so.
Happy Gilmore is a terrible movie. Acer number one.
Book learning.
Book.
I don't think I need to explain, but just in case. That's a totally unfair advantage for the Big Ten, that book learning.
That's deeply, deeply unfair and insulting.
That was the point, right?
I mean, this reminds me, we were talking to Steve and he was being very, very like professional and then he just like dropped something out of nowhere about like
Ole Miss.
I don't remember.
He's definitely been on some Ole Miss related rants.
But there was one that was just like, and of course nobody learns anything in the South ever. Okay. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
He's super professional. He's
a
super professional.
He is.
And then occasionally he's just like, and now I'm not going to be that for
And
the
then I'm
going to
massively troll everybody for a moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, book learning. Book. Out the door.
God damn it. All right. My number one is gasoline. I took the flight thing one step farther. It's like, what is the worst thing for the children? And I thought gasoline because, of course, if you drink the gasoline, that's bad.
That's trouble. Sniffing it, also not good.
No, like everything involved with the gasoline is bad. It's bad for the environment, which of course the children are in.
Yes.
They are in the environment. And if you got rid of gasoline, then you wouldn't have cars. You wouldn't have planes. I guess you would still have trains. That's a problem.
We're gonna have to shut that down.
We gotta figure out a way to shut the trains down. But, yeah, cause in Commodore, not Commodore. In Comrade Sankey's America, you cannot go from state to state.
His America very different from Jim Harbaugh's America.
This is up here with like the most ridiculous segments we've ever done, I think.
Might adopt it.
All right, we're gonna take a break, come back, talk some hockey.
Band book learning.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshore Lending. By now you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7 and a half.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have 3 really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
HomeSure Lending.
Good boys. HomeSure Lending, 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you. HomeSureLending.com. HomeSureLending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue.
HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, a fully equipped kitchen in every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Concerned about my happiness, but all that thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry enough. Are you and your friends a word about me? I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51.
Speaking of book learning and how some people don't have it, this weekend's hockey series against Wisconsin had the most ridiculous goal review I've ever seen.
I did witness not the review live, but I've seen the play since.
I mean,
and
so
my goodness.
If you haven't seen this, the net kind of comes up in the way that the net often does. It's still on the peg, but it's lifted up enough so that the puck can slide under the outside of the net, which it does.
Let's repeat that. The outside of the net.
The outside of the net. And you can tell this because the goalie's skate is directly on the peg. Like there is literally nothing in physics that would allow this to become a legitimate goal inside the designated area.
Yes.
And somehow they call it a goal anyway. And then a couple of our guys who were at the game were talking or overheard some Big Ten officials being like, oh, yeah, that was an easy call because they're idiots.
Yeah.
Which is something that kind of came up earlier this week. By the way, this is Aces Hockey Podcast.
Welcome. Hello. Hi.
Which is something that kind of came up earlier this week because I think the deputy commissioner, whoever is in charge of Big Ten hockey, gave an interview to U.S. College Hockey Online. And in it, he was like, you know, I'm not a hockey guy. And for one, it's like, come on. What are you doing? and he's kind of talking about attendance at the Joe and at the X and why it's not any good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who could have predicted this? Who except anybody who had ever paid attention to the sport of college hockey, which apparently does not include the person who's in charge of college hockey in the Big Ten. And their solution that they might be proposing is a quote unquote super tournament with another league, which is like, wait, what? What? So the Big Ten plays its tournament and then they play their other tournament at the same time? Like,
yeah, what? That doesn't even make sense.
It makes no sense. And I just kind of despair because, you know, we're in the situation where we've got Sankey and where's Jim Delaney? Jim Delaney is nowhere. Jim Delaney was last seen proposing freshman ineligibility.
And resting on his laurels after adding Rutgers.
And I just, the Big Ten is not run by people who are in charge of things for a reason. They've probably been pretty good at mining money, but that's because of the demographics of the Big Ten fan bases. It has really nothing to do.
It'd be very hard to not make a big pile of money given the.
Yeah, you could totally rotate all the college commissioners and there would be no drop off in Michigan's ability to derive money from the Big Ten. And so we don't judge on that. We judge on whether the things you do make any sense.
And leaders and legends.
And the things that they've done do not make any sense. But that's not really about hockey. The unfortunate thing is that I have nothing to say about hockey. Is that is not the thing I have said about hockey for the past couple months. This is a dynamic offensive team that is spectacular, especially that top line. They are terrible defensively. They remain terrible defensively. They gave up 4 goals to Wisconsin again.
Wisconsin is not good.
Wisconsin is almost as bad as Michigan State.
They've won one conference game this year.
Yeah, they're
They outshot Michigan. They put up 40 shots against Michigan in regulation on Saturday, and that game could have been worse. But Racine actually played a really good game and was not helped out by anybody on his team.
Do we have any idea how good Steve Racine is?
No, we have no idea.
Yeah.
He's been up and down over the course of his career, but I wouldn't ever judge a goalie playing behind this kind of defense. So one of those things where every game there's something else. Like, this was a really rough game for Werenski, who took two key penalties early in the third and gave up a breakaway. And it's frustrating because early in the year, his commitment level seemed kind of low. And that was very frustrating because you think this guy's going to go to the NHL next year. He really needs to step it up and do all this stuff. He seemed to be doing that through the middle portion of the year. He had a great World Juniors tournament. He was like their rock on that USA team. He played 30 minutes a night. And he comes back, and Michigan looks pretty good, and he's doing okay. He's never going to be a imposing defender. But he had stopped making glaring errors, and this weekend those kind of crop back up. Hopefully just a one-time thing. That happens to everybody, of course. But if it's not him, it's going to be Downing. If it's not Downing, it'll be Boca or Cutler Martin, or it'll be any of the other forwards who aren't checking a guy who's alone in the slot. And at this point, it is what it is. The only thing that keeps becoming more clear to me is that you can't hire Brian Wiseman
because he's been in charge of this defense.
I mean, I'm sure he's a good coach, but you can't hire a guy who has never been a head coach and who replaces Mel, and at that point, that's when Michigan's ability to play defense just collapses. I don't think that's necessarily his fault, but it's just the optics are bad, and you have very good options who have actually been head coaches.
Namely Mel, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, Mel's obviously at the top of that list, but there are a number of guys out east who have made fantastic programs out of teams that had never really performed at that level before. So Union and Providence and Lowell, and this year Quinnipiac, all those programs came from absolute nowhere to be very good. And maybe in there's a guy who you can really find to make your program an excellent one. Because Michigan's always going to recruit. Yeah. Michigan has a ton of guys from the state on their roster.
You've got the National Team Development Program playing at the Cube.
Well, they moved to Plymouth, but
still close.
Yeah. and you know, Michigan State isn't going to compete for those guys anytime soon. So you're always going to compete. You're always going to recruit, and then it's about getting the most out of those guys. And I just don't think that anyone on the current staff has a particularly good argument that they can do that.
Not with the like product versus talent level that has been.
Yeah. So I mean, this team is a good team, but it's still not as good as it should be. And you can look at all the defensive stats, and it'll tell you that, because defense like that isn't a matter of necessarily talent. It's about knowing your responsibilities and executing those responsibilities. And a lot of teams that don't have five NHL draft picks on the blue line are doing that just fine. So anyway, Michigan stays number six in the pairwise, despite dropping a half game to Wisconsin. That is about par for the course, I think, at this point, because Wisconsin is 10 or 15 slots above Michigan State in the RPI. So you can drop one game on a road series and still get away with it. So Michigan stays at six, and they are one weekend closer to not blowing it. At this point, you're going to start looking at anything other than going 2-6 or worse to end the season as something that gets Michigan into the tournament. We might be able to say that Michigan has all but locked down a bid as early as next week, depending on how that goes, which is nice. I'm going to enjoy the terror of single elimination playoff hockey. I might not even mind it that much this year. Because
with this team.
Team is like, well, you know, they could go out, advantage. They could win, but they don't really feel like a team that deserves to win the whole thing.
But those type of teams, you know, sometimes win the whole thing. Yeah.
Especially when you can score against anybody.
Yeah.
So
I'll enjoy watching that first line for as long as they're playing together, because they are absolutely ridiculously good.
Yeah, and we'll see. Hopefully Winnipeg is like, we'll wait one more year. There is a CBA reason to do that, although teams don't really seem to take advantage of it very much, is that free agency doesn't kick in until you're 28 if you sign your first contract when you're 20. Hmm. So like, or if you're not in the NHL by the time you're 20. So I know this because I was kind of an Oilers fan, and they kept getting like good players, and then they would play them immediately in the NHL. I'm just like, that's so stupid, because you're giving up a year of that guy's prime that you don't have to buy out.
Yes.
For a year that, oh, look, you're one of the worst teams in the league again. Congratulations. So there is a reason to leave that guy another year, but NHL teams don't seem to have that foresight. So we will see what happens with those guys. Hopefully after one of them wins the Hobie and another guy finishes second.
That'd be pretty nice.
We will see. Good podcast. Good hockey podcast.
Great podcast.
All right. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk gravitational waves. Actually, no, the podcast is over. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Book Learning.
Better than us.
Nobody.
I'm fired up, Paul.